Hello everyone, this is Omar Alvarado of theparadiddler.com, the blog for all things drumming. Thanks for tuning in to this podcast. Today we have a very special guest, someone that I've admired for quite some time, and I'm very pleased to have him on with us today. He's based out of Vancouver, British Columbia, and he's been performing and teaching drums for over 20 years. He's produced several drumming instruction publications, including the Modern Drummer Magazine 2010 Reader's Poll winning book, The Total Rock Drummer, and the multi-DVD drum instruction course, The Drumming System. He studied with such greats as Jim Chapin, Virgil Donati, and Don Famularo, and is dedicated to passing along with what he's learned to budding drummers everywhere. So it's my pleasure to introduce to you a professional drummer, percussionist, and educator, Mike McAlpin. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing awesome, Omar. How are you?
I'm doing great. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah.
I'd like to just dive right in. Just like for you to tell us a little bit about yourself, Mike, how you started drumming way back when. Early influences, musical education, and that kind of thing.
That's a big question.
Take
Okay,
your time.
well, I actually didn't actually pick up my first set of drumsticks till I was just 17, and that was not from lack of interest. I mean, I wanted to play drums as a kid. At age 5, my folks bought me like one of those, department store drum sets that were worth about $30, and I beat the crap out of it. I actually destroyed it in about a week, and that was not because I didn't like it. I think because that's what I thought drums were, back in the day watching, TV shows with the Who on. My dad watching shows and the Who were playing and they're destroying drums. Well, hey, that's what you do with drums. So I think they sort of thought, well, this isn't for him. We're going to go spend $30 on a drum set and he's going to destroy it. Let's get him a punching bag instead. So that never, I didn't actually get a chance to continue on. Never really thought about it. When you're young, 5 or 6, you never think about it much further. Always liked the drums. I can remember the days of even being like 13, 14, the air bands at school, and I always wanted to be the drummer, and I didn't know which hand would hit the hi-hat, and I didn't know which hand would hit the snare, or even what a snare drum was, but I always wanted to be the drummer, and I got stuck being the guitar player. Not that's a bad thing, but I was always the guitar player or the singer. And then had the opportunity when I was 16, and I moved back to Winnipeg, Central Canada, a great place to be from. And a cousin of mine was working at a music store, and somehow we just got talking about music and music lessons. And my first question was, do they offer drum lessons? And they said, yeah, we got a teacher there. And so I signed up, but I didn't sign up for a couple of months, and I was just turned 17. I think it was March 31st, and my birthday is March 4th. So that was my first real introduction. So kind of a late starter, but always wanted to do it. You know what I mean? So, and that was a good time because I figured I was at that age where I was going to probably take it serious. I've always been the kind of person that when I get started on something, I try to take it pretty serious. And things in the past that I've done aside from drumming have ended due to, things that are out of my control. I used to race bikes, and I racked up my bike so bad that mom wasn't going to fix it anymore, so that was out of my control. I was heavily into martial arts as a teenager, and then our teacher picked up and split and with all our money, so that was out of my control. A lot of things like that, but then drumming all of a sudden just sort of bit me in the butt at age 17, and wow, here we are, like, holy smokes, like, yeah, that's a long time later. 23 years later, I think? Or wait, yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
Wow, crazy.
time flies for
Time
sure.
does fly, I tell you, man, it's crazy. Yeah.
So, as you started, learning more about drums, when was it where you started to see, well, hey, this is something that I actually want to keep doing, maybe as a career?
Well, it was funny because, at age 17, you're sort of, I was in grade 11, and I had a job delivering pizzas so I could afford drums. It was great. I go to school all day, and I'd come home and do my homework or do my homework at the pizza place and then deliver pizzas till 2 or 3 in the morning and then go back to school. And I did this for many, many months, but I was able to buy all kinds of cool drum equipment. And I was enjoying it. I had a second teacher. My first teacher, I won't mention his name, he was very discouraging, and I almost quit, believe it or not. And then I had a second teacher who was very encouraging and kept me wanting to go and play. But then he started getting me to sub out for his band. And it was a blues band, kind of a classic rock blues band. And in Winnipeg, you could be 18 and play in the bars. That was legal drinking age. So I was able to go and play in these restaurants and bars at age 18. It was about a year after my playing. And here I am playing the drums, having a blast, and getting paid. I'm like, what is this all about? Like, what do you mean I'm getting paid, really? And, all of a sudden I was then going on the road with bands that my drum teacher knew, and I was making more money doing that than I was at the pizza place. You know, and it's like, wait a second, I'm working my butt off at the pizza place and, you know, delivering pizzas in minus 30 degree weather, and or I could go on the road to, like, you know, beautiful places like Banff, Alberta, you know, or places like that, or down to Vancouver or anything like that, and make the same money or better, but, you know, play drums. And then I kind of realized, I wonder if I could make this a career. And that was the early age. I mean, the steps of my career have changed from year to year, but that's kind of how it really started. In that time, believe it or not, I did still manage to get a degree in business administration out of high school. So it was like, you know, in between touring and taking lessons, going to college out of high school, too. So it's kind of I've had a busy life, you know, but it's all sort of worked out in the end for me. But that's how it really did get started, you know.
So then what kind of jobs then were you able to, like, what kind of gigs and jobs were you able to land now that you had this, you know, all this drumming under your belt now?
Well, at that point, it was mostly blues and rock and roll, okay? And then I was studying with another great drummer from Winnipeg who was actually the drummer for the Crash Test Dummies. Some of you may have heard of that band, maybe not. A very well-known band in Canada out of Winnipeg in the 1990s. And the drummer's name was George. And Mitch was starting to refer me to jazz gigs. The only problem was I had no idea how to play jazz. And I remember him lending me a Jack DeJohnette cassette, saying, you know, listen to this. And I was completely lost. I had no idea where the one was or why the drummer was playing like that. And that's when I thought, okay, I have to take a break from live playing and go back to school. And that's when I enrolled for a music program at Grant McEwen University in Edmonton, Canada, where I also had lived as a kid and had lots of friends out there. So I signed up for it was officially a jazz program, although they did touch on everything from snare drum technique to classical, because I wanted to expand my horizons. I mean, I love playing blues and rock, but that sort of was all it was, you know? And I looked at it as, well, I want to be more than just a blues and rock drummer. And that probably came from hearing a Buddy Rich quote on one of his videos saying a drummer should be a drummer. You know, don't just be a funk drummer, don't just be a country drummer. And me being this young, you know, young kid going, okay, well, what do I have to be? And he says, you know, try to be everything. I was like, wow, okay, I guess I can do that. You know, then seeing drummers like Steve Gadd play on video, how they could do everything from jazz to Latin to funk to groove to pop. It was just crazy, you know. And I thought, okay, I have to expand my horizon as a drummer to get more work. And you know, and then out of college, I spent 2 years in college learning how to read. I couldn't read, and learning styles and whatnot, and, you know, learning the discipline of the instrument. And then coming out to Vancouver in 1994 is when I moved out here. You know, it was the same kind of thing. It was right at that scene of Soundgarden and Tool and Nirvana, right at the alternative rock sort of grunge era. And I was in a band that almost made it really big, but that style was dying as quickly as it arose, and that band didn't survive. So here I am going, okay, now I'm in Vancouver, an expensive place to live, no longer have a band. I guess I got to go work construction for a while to survive. But with my training, to kind of answer your question, learning how to read and learning styles, I thought, what can I do to make money playing a whole bunch of different styles and reading? And I ended up calling up, this was before the internet, calling up my old university prof, and I said, you know, what should I do? And he says, have you thought about going and playing on the cruise ships? And I just kind of was like, what? He goes, hey, it's a great way to make money. And, of course, I had student loans, I had a car payment, and I had rent. I needed money, and I didn't really want to have to go and do a job that I didn't want to do. So I applied. And at first they turned me down, and, you know, they said, well, you know, I actually applied to several cruise lines, and a lot of them turned me down due to no experience. And then I did get a job with Carnival Cruise Lines, and I worked with them for about 10 and a half months, and I paid off my student loan, paid off my car, had a great experience, had the time of my life. I would suggest it for anyone who's young and single that wants to do that kind of thing. I wouldn't do it now. I mean, back then they were paying $400 U.S. a week, which was great back in 1996, you know, for someone who had no money. Now I couldn't afford to do that, but it was great. You know, you needed to be able to read. You had to be able to work with a conductor, and you had to be able to play tons of styles. So to me, that was fun, you know. And it's one of those gigs that you either love or you hate it. And I was sort of in between, you know. Sometimes I'd love it, and sometimes I'd hate it. But you know, they give you a paycheck, and this all went back home to pay my bills, and I'm living on the ocean, getting a suntan, playing drums at night. Hey, what's wrong with that, right? So,
right, exactly. And
I then came back to Vancouver, 97, and kind of started fresh again. You know, I started getting back into teaching. You know, so also with the ability to have, you know, ability to be able to read and understand drum music, I was able to start teaching, you know, at like local music stores and stuff around Vancouver. So kind of got my feet wet then at that point, where it was getting into some serious teaching, probably in the mid to August, late 90s would be.
All right. So really what sparked all of that, you know, that career path, I think, was a sense of humility at one point where, you know, you felt like you needed to learn more. You needed to learn how to read music. You needed to learn different styles so that you could progress into these other areas.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I enjoyed it, too, you know. That's the thing, is I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed learning, and I enjoyed expanding my horizons and just sort of, you know, honing in on my craft and try to get better and just be one of those guys that would get called for more stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry if I'm talking too much.
No, that's fine.
You know, and I elaborate this with my students, too, and I say, guys, you know, it's good to have the ability to do one thing, but I said, imagine if you're a carpenter and you only own a hammer. The only job you're going to get is the hammer job. So, yeah, you know, get a screwdriver and get a drill and get a saw, and then you're now going to be the guy that can do a few more things. So that's what I wanted to do, because it was funny. The drum bug just kept biting me. And I was like, okay, I guess I can't go get a real job right now, even though I had a degree in business.
Yeah.
I run my business. So.
Well, a lot of times that happens. You get a degree in one thing, you end up doing something else.
Oh, many people do.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about your playing style. To me, it's really interesting. I've watched some of your videos, some of the drum covers that you do, and it's always something, me personally, I've wanted to ask you is, for example, the way you hold your sticks when you're riding the hi-hat, for example, it's like way up. And your snare hand is like kind of back, and they're kind of far away from each other. So it's not directly aimed at that, but I'm kind of curious to know how you came about to play that way and it be comfortable for you. And what do you suggest? What tips do you have for others regarding like position behind the kit, optimum drum and cymbal placement, that kind of thing?
It's very awkward looking, isn't it?
You know, I had to ask you about it.
It is the most comfortable way that I've discovered drumming. Okay. As far as my hi-hat height to my snare, I changed my setup height right around the time we did the molar video, maybe just a little bit before that, because I was really going for better ergonomics of the drum set so I could get around better. And that was by having like a little sort of private lesson with Thomas Lang, where we talked about setup and placement of the drums for ease of getting around, right? And I raised my snare about 4 inches. Which was crazy, but I didn't want to change my hi-hat height because I liked where my hi-hat was. But now, by crossing over, like, you know, let's say I was playing, for you guys that understand the grips, say I was playing American grip in both hands, I was crossing over and I was hitting my wrist together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, this isn't good. So if I'm just trying to play, like, really heavy backbeat 2 and 4, playing straight ahead quarter notes or eighth notes on the hi-hat and just hitting snare on 2 and 4, this wasn't working. And this was also coming from a lot of producers saying, you know, we need more snare. You know, we need you to hit the snare harder. And then when I raised both arms up, you know, crossed over like originally the way a lot of guys play, is my hi-hat was also accented or played louder on 2 and 4. And that was becoming a problem with some of the sessions I was doing. So I come home and I thought, what am I going to do? Because, you know, I'm not giving these producers and these engineers what they're asking for. How can I change this, you know, and talk to Dom Famulero, and he said, well, play open-handed. And, you know, I open-handed left-hand lead on the hi-hat, and I did try that, but I found that, you know, it wasn't as natural for me. I'd have to go back and completely start over again. So I'm sitting there, you know, what I like to do is I analyze a lot of things in my life, and I'm sitting here behind the drum set, and I'm looking at this, going, okay, there's the hi-hat, there's the snare. And if you guys know what the Germanic grip is, or the German grip, I do talk about this a lot on my Molar Method Secrets video, is like a 90-degree angle of the stick to one another if you're putting them in the center of the snare drum. And what I did is I just basically moved my right hand forward from that position on the snare drum, okay? And then I angled my wrist just a little bit out, so I was almost hitting the hi-hat. If we're looking at the hi-hat from where we sit at the drum, say that the closest point to you is 6 o'clock, I was trying to hit at 4 o'clock. And what this did is it opened up a whole wide area of the snare drum. You see, you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And now I can see the center of my snare drum by sort of playing around to the hi-hat. I mean, you never want to lift your shoulder or lift your elbow. If you ever notice, it's just my wrist. The only thing that's actually changing from the way I would play from American grip on the hi-hat is now by playing to German grip, which is my wrist angling. So people now see the stick at this really weird angle going, dude, you got to fix that, man. There's something wrong with that. You don't know. Believe it or not, it's a solution to an old problem that I had for 20 years, or, you know, not quite 20 years, probably 15. And now I can comfortably play in Germanic grip on the hi-hat and still smack the snare on 2 and 4. It takes a little getting used to. My hand wanted to always come back to the American grip, and from time to time I would hit my wrist. It doesn't feel good. But now it's just a real natural thing, you know. And, yeah, it looks a little weird, but it works. And that's just one of those things. I thought, you know, I can't move my hi-hat anymore to the right because I either have a tom there or a double pedal or some sort of a pedal underneath. But I'm also, you know, I'm 6 foot and I've got long arms, so I can't have stuff too close to me. Stuff has to be far enough away that it's got to feel comfortable. And that's the thing. And believe it or not, as uncomfortable as it looks, it's the most comfortable way that I can play the drums right now. You guys can try it. It's a weird thing, but, you know, believe it or not, it does work.
I'm going to try it, and it's a lesson in how each drummer should experiment different ways to play and see what's comfortable for them, regardless of how it looks, even, as long as it's comfortable for you.
Yeah, I should do a YouTube video on that, shouldn't I?
Yeah. I just gave you an idea.
You just did, yeah. I'm looking for some new lesson ideas, so I think I should do that. Because I get so many comments of, what's with your right hand, man?
Well, now they know, and now you can splurge on it a little bit.
Totally will. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned the Moeller video that you made, and that's kind of a little bit what I want to talk about next. When in your career did you see the need for that type of instruction, and how did you determine where to focus first?
Well, as you know, I mean, the company that's done all my DVDs is Railroad Media.
Mm-hmm.
Based out of Abbotsford, British Columbia, just outside of Vancouver here. And the president, producer, was a guy who took some lessons with me for a while. And he had contacted me about doing this video. And I was like, really? Because, I mean, he saw me do a drum clinic. I do clinics for Yamaha drums and for Victor and whatnot. And we were talking technique. And he came out to this clinic, and we were talking technique, and I was talking all this stuff. And he said, we should do a video. And I thought, you know, I'm not the right guy for this because who knows who I am? Nobody knows who I am. I'm just this guy that's sharing the knowledge from Jim Chapin and Dom Famularo and all the Joe Morello stuff and the Billy Gladstone, all that technique. You know, and he says, well, let's go for it. And I thought, well, hey, if we sell 10 copies, that's great. Okay, let's do it. You know, I mean, it's not gonna, I said, is it going to cost me anything? He goes, no, just your time. Hey, I can give you that. And we filmed that, wow, 2006 already. That's a long time ago. And I think they've sold about 20,000 of those DVDs. It's crazy.
Wow,
But it was funny because I was really nervous. I mean, that was my first DVD. And the opening scene, I had never spoken into a camera before. And it was like my voice was cracking. And I'm like, hi, my name is Michael. And I was really nervous because to me, when I'm one-on-one with a student, it's one thing. You know, you act or interact with a person. It's just like the interview we're doing right now. I'm interacting with you knowing that, you know, drummers will be hearing this, but now I'm far more comfortable. And I thought to myself, you know, even if we were filming, I'm not the right guy for this gig. You guys got to get Jim Chapin or Dom or one of those, you know, real technique heavies. But I think it was, you know, for me, it's the importance, to answer your question, sorry, I'm getting off track again.
No, it's all right.
The importance is longevity, okay, of how long we can play. I mean, it's great to be able to play fast, and it's really great to be able to play powerful, but how about how long we could do that? And what really inspired me was when I was studying with Jim Chapin. I mean, for you guys that don't know who Jim is or was, please look him up and even check out Jim's original video. That's where it all started, right? And Jim, I mean, I was taking lessons with Jim up until about 3 years before his death. And it was amazing how this man that could hardly walk and could hardly see could play faster and more powerful than me. Someone, I mean, I can bench press 360 pounds, and this man could hit the drums harder than me. Oh, and I'm man. Like, how is this possible? And it had nothing to do with physical strength, you know what I'm saying? It had to do with technique. And I'm going, whoa, 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 wait a second, this is interesting. And how old are you? You know, but even Jim, up until the hour he died, he was on a practice pad in the bed, you know, playing on a practice pad. And it was just insane. And I thought, you know, he's been doing this his whole life, never dealt with any pain in his hands. You know, the rest of his body eventually gave out, but his hands were, they just carried on forever. And that was so important to me because anytime I developed pain in my hands from playing drums, I had to figure out what was going on. And I'd go to a teacher, someone who knew what they were talking about. Like, you know, you can go, wow, how'd you hook up with Jim Chapin? I said, you know, there's this new thing out there called the internet. You know, and I literally, but it was just, you know, also knowing some people who knew him and going to the master like that was like, wow, this is fantastic, you know. It's like going to the world's greatest hockey player to learn how to play golf, or going to, you know, I screwed that up. Going to the world's greatest
hockey golf,
Tiger Woods a golf lesson, and it was mainly to let drummers see that, you know, you can take your speed and you can take your power, but that's always going to get better. But pain will only get worse.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, if you don't do something about it. And there was times where I was feeling pain in my arms, and I fixed that. It went away. I mean, touch wood, that it's gone and it's gone forever. But it's from something as simple as changing how you hold the drumstick. I mean, chapter one in the Moeller Method video, how to hold the drumstick. And I held it wrong for a long time. Long time, you know. And it's loose, you know. So yeah, to kind of do that, when we did the video on that, it was like to see how it was going. I thought, you know, I was telling Jared and those guys at Railroad, I said, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how a technique video sells with a no-name guy like myself on it. And it still does well, you know, which is great. There's a lot of other great videos out there right now that compete with it and with bigger-name drummers than myself. But that's all good because, to me, that's, the information is getting shared with every drummer out there.
Right.
And we're going to hear less and less stories of great drummers not being able to play due to tendonitis or carpal tunnel syndrome or, you know, fatigue or stuff like that. So I think that was the reason for that one, you know, is to let people play for a long period of time and not deal with pain. You know, we've got enough pain with learning new beats and fills and songs.
Right.
we don't need physical pain. Let's deal with the mental pain.
So that gave you the itch, so to speak, to develop these other videos like, you know, the jazz drumming system, Latin drumming system. You know, what made you go into those particular specific areas?
Well, a lot of it was for my own teaching purpose. You know, and teaching was something that found me, you know. It was just something I really enjoyed. And, you know, I would get calls from people saying, do you teach jazz? I'd be like, yes. Oh, wow. Well, it's hard to find a jazz teacher. And same thing, like, the reason I stopped studying with my really good teacher in Winnipeg is because I wanted to study jazz, and he said, I can't teach you that. I've never studied it. Wow, that's interesting. I mean, there's quite a few jazz videos out there, and there's lots of jazz books out there that I've studied through and been through, but I thought, how can I cover, like, I think there's something like 650 exercises that we do in that video. I think it's like three DVDs and one CD and a book, and I wanted to cover every aspect of jazz drumming that I've had to encounter in my career, you know, from brushes to 3-4 jazz, 5-4, and playing brushes in all three of those time signatures, two feel, a one feel, things that you see on a chart that you go, whoa, what does this mean? And it was from students of mine bringing in these charts saying, what does this mean? What does that mean? What is a one feel? What does this mean, you know, halftime swing, or what does this mean, jazz waltz, or, you know, and I started compiling all these different ideas of things that students were coming to me with, saying, you know, how do I improve at this? My teacher at school wants me to get better at that. And so when I talked to the guys at Railroad Media about this, I said, well, we can go crazy on this. We can just do tons and tons of exercises, you know, and comping with the right hand and comping with the left foot on the hi-hat, and explaining what all this stuff is, too. I mean, I went into a lot of depth of what this all means. You know, anybody who has my jazz drumming system, you know, the questions are answered. You know, things like, for me, I was saying, you know, what is comping mean? What is that? What, you know, little things like that we just don't ever hear on other videos. You know, guys will talk about stuff like that, and I'm a video nut. I must honestly own, about 200 drum videos, plus, maybe. And, I take what I can take from these videos, and I go, oh, man, he should have talked about this, or she should have talked about that. And that's what I thought that needed to be done with that. And I don't really consider myself a jazz drummer. I know that I can sit in on the jazz gig or the big band gig and, you know, and get through the gig and do it, but I mm-hmm. would call myself, you know, a jazz drummer, you know, per se. So, but anybody who wants to get into the style and understand it, that's really was the approach on that. And then the same with the Latin stuff is even going back to the audition that I had to do for Carnival Cruise Lines, and even when I was auditioning to get into university, the questions were, okay, can you play a rock beat? Yep. Can you play a funky? Yep. Can you play brushes? Nope. Can you play a mambo? Nope. Can you play a cha-cha? Nope. Can you play a soca? Nope. Wow. You know, things like that were just entrance exam stuff to get in. And once again, you know, me being the white Canadian boy, I'm sure there's been ridicule somewhere around the world on that. But it's not about saying, hey, look at me, I'm the guy that's teaching Latin music. It's I'm trying to get people understanding more about the style so that they can dig more into it and really check out the masters of Latin music. Because, you know, for me, I jumped right into the real heavies, and I was very confused. I loved the music, but I didn't understand. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand it. And I would go to other teachers like myself and say, hey, can you teach me about clave, or can you teach me about merengue, or can you teach me about cascara? And they'd look at me like I was from Cuba. and I'd be like, well, wait a second, no, can you help me? And a lot of people couldn't. You know, I studied at Drummers Collective in New York City. I did their five-day intensive back in 1993, but all that stuff was just touched on because there's a reason they call it an intensive course, because they get you doing so much stuff in those 5 days. And I was hungry. I really got hungry for the style. And my real two favorite styles of music are Latin and funk. You know, and you start combining those two together, you get a real cool combination. So, but once again, it's just about the understanding. I mean, have you seen the Latin drumming system?
I haven't seen it yet. I mean, I have on my list a few of your videos that I want to see, but I've seen it in the drumming system where you touch on it.
Well, yeah, on the drumming system, we just touch on a few of the grooves, once again, just to kind of give you a taste, because, we didn't want to obviously cover everything we did in jazz and in the Latin. That would defeat the purpose. But, as for guys who want to get into Latin drumming and say, yes, I want to be able to have 10 different Latin beats that I can take to the gig, or, you know, to the hotel gig, the ballroom gig, whatever, you know, the big band gig. You'd be amazed. You go sub with a big band, people think the big band is just jazz. Nope. It could be anything. It could be funk. It could be rock. It could be Latin. It could be swing. It could be bebop. You know, people have to understand that, too, that big band doesn't mean jazz.
It just means it's a big band.
It's a big band. Exactly. You know, listen to the Buddy Rich Band. I mean, it's not just jazz. He does funk stuff. They do Latin stuff. It's great, you know.
So basically, it's kind of like if you want to learn something, teach it. And that's what you ended up doing. You ended up learning these things because you ended up having to know them so you can teach it, and you ended up learning yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's probably the best way to sum it up, yeah.
So then you made these other videos that we talked about. Now the drumming system comes in. What was the impetus behind that one? Because that's a big instruction set. It's like 20 DVDs or something like that. How did that come about?
That many? Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah, I think it's big.
20 DVDs, 15 CDs, and 5 workbooks. Wow. I guess you got your work cut up for it. Okay, this, you know, honestly, what inspired this was me looking in the mirror at myself when I was 10, and also some friends of mine who work way up north, like northern British Columbia, where, you know, they don't even have a 7-Eleven, you know, let alone a drum shop or a drum teacher. Like, this place would have, like, a post office and a grocery store and a gas station. And friends of mine are moving up there and wanting to learn drums. I'm like, what should I do? Is there anything online? Well, yeah, there's some stuff online. There's guys giving lessons. No, I need to start from scratch. I'd be like, well, you got to move 1,000 miles to the closest city and find a teacher. You know, that was the answer I was giving these guys. And I thought to myself, well, what about the guys that can't get to a teacher but want to spend a lifetime learning? You see what I'm saying? Yep. For myself, my dad moved around a lot when I was young, so we kind of bounced around from province to province. And a lot of it was small oil towns in Alberta where, once again, it was, you know, gas station, grocery store, and post office. And I wanted to play drums, but that was just out of the question. Because you'd have to drive, like I said, 60 or 70 miles to the nearest city, you know, in the middle of winter when there's blizzards and all that. It's not going to happen. So I thought, how can we create something that people can have at home if they cannot make it to a drum teacher? Something like, I mean, you know, someone who can really help them hone in on their skills. And it was also the way we designed it was, where do you start? That's the biggest question from the, where do you start? Well, obviously, if you're a brand new beginner, I would suggest starting right at the very beginning. And, you know, you're hearing me now. I talk a lot, right? And people can fast forward to that stuff and get to the point or get to the part they want to learn or understand and then move from there and progress at their own rate, you know? But it's also for the guys that, even if there's guys that can get to a drum teacher that maybe don't have the time to commit, or maybe they work weird schedules, or busy with family or whatever, or travel with work, things like that, is now they can say, well, I'm going to take DVD 1 and watch that, and I'm going to maybe watch DVD 3 and see if that's, maybe I missed something, and I'll go back to DVD 2. And they sort of become their own teacher. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like they're kind of watching, going, oh, okay, wait, I have to go back. Mike's talking about this six-stroke roll thing, and I missed that chapter. So I should go back and watch the rudiment section where he's talking about the six-stroke roll. And understand that, and then progress from there. I mean, there is a lot of information on there, but then again, as you know, Omar, I mean, we've been playing drums for a long time. You're never going to stop learning, you know?
This is true.
You and I are both students of the drums still.
Yeah.
I mean, every time I come into my drum lab here, I am learning something brand new, and it never ends. It absolutely never ends. So that was kind of the idea for that. Of course, you know, lots of play-alongs. I, of course, Railroad Media said, well, we're going to do this, this, and this. We're going to add this, this, and this. So they also had a big part in making it as huge as possible. You know, when we went in there, started filming, you know, and we blocked off 2 weeks in the studio, I was like, wow, we need that much time? Well, how long are we doing? Like, how big is this project, really? I know we're doing, you know, all these different chapters, but how much are we really doing? And there were some 14-hour days. And there were a lot of 14-hour days.
Yeah.
You know, and at the end of it, I'm like, I'm like racking my head against the wall because, you know, you're going to play everything as perfect as you can. And it's going to be done to a metronome. And I have to be smiling at the same time. And it was a challenge, but to me, the end result was such, I was just so blown away. So if any of you guys ever saw the unveiling of that when they first released that thing, that was real because I'd never seen it before. And I'm at the office in Railroad Media. I'm opening it up, and I'm like, holy cow, look at this thing. But I didn't know it was going to be 20 DVDs. That's the thing. And I'm sure they had to cut out some stuff. But that's, you know, I think that's a lot. It's like anything. You know, if you want to get really good at something, you have to have a lot of knowledge, a lot of books. Like I said, I have 200 drum DVDs. And you do the math on that, you know, at 60, 70 bucks the DVD, oof, I think about that and go, yikes. You know, I mean, people go, well, the drumming system costs, you know, whatever it is that Railroad Media sells it for, and they go, gee, that seems like a lot. And I say, you know, the funny thing, though, is you take two lessons of weekly drum lessons with me, that's the same price as drumming system.
The whole thing, yep.
So, so that was sort of the reason. I mean, it's not like I'm trying to put myself out of business. You know, believe it or not, none of my students have the drumming system.
Well, they have you.
No, because the thing, what am I going to say? Hey, guys, go home and watch disc 6 and 7, you know, and then we'll talk about that. A few of them have it, and we use it as a supplement. You know, majority of my teaching, I do use my Total Rock Drummer book because it gets them doing a lot of stuff that, you know, they're into, and, you know, typical rock and funk and, you know, understanding all the note values and that. But the drumming system was designed for someone who wanted to play drums that really couldn't get to a teacher, that was disciplined enough to say, you know what, I know you're going to get into this question with the practice routine generator, but I can practice X amount, or I can turn out, you know, or this amount, or that amount, depending on my schedule. And I did send a copy to that friend of mine who lives up north. He's in forestry, old buddy of mine from grade one that I'm still in touch with. And he loved it, you know, but he'll be gone. Like, he'll go on the, and work in the woods and the forest for 17 days and then be home for 5 days and then be gone again for 18 days and home for 3 days. But he says, you know, those 3 days that he's home, two of them will be spent watching the drum system. And he's like, he goes, I'm getting better, man. I'm going to send you a video, but not yet. And that's exciting because I have nothing to do with that right now. It's all what's on that video. So that's probably the main reason for that. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, from my experience, the drumming system touches at least a little bit on everything so that a drummer can see what they are interested in or what they need to focus on, and they just go right to it. They, you know, if they want to start at the beginning or they want to focus on something that they need to work on, they can do either of those, and it works just right.
Yep.
So just as an example then, we're definitely not going to go into the whole thing, but, you know, lots of drummers, when they start, you know, learning, they, you know, when I want to play in a gig, or, you know, they think they're good enough to play, you know, with a band. So just as a primer, like, if you could touch a little bit on if they wanted to, you know, get their feet wet landing a gig, or if they want a better gig, what tips and suggestions do you have to increase their chances of getting a gig or getting a better gig? If you could touch a little bit on that.
It's simple. The word P-R-O, what does that spell?
Pro.
Pro. How do you be pro? You be prepared, you be reliable, and you be on time. Now, to me, what does prepared mean? Well, prepared means I've got the tunes together, you know, I know the song names, you know, I know the music. To me, that's being prepared for the gig or the audition. Reliable is the guy going to show up for the audition or for the rehearsal or for the gig? Can I rely on this guy? So you guys got to be reliable. And then the third one goes without saying, is on time. Be on time for the rehearsal, for the audition, for the gig. Musicians that are serious about what they do love those kind of players, you know. And that's a big part of it. You don't have to be the next Buddy Rich or the next Neil Peart or whoever it is. All you have to be able to do is just do the gig. Can you hang with that gig? You know, I've got students that are in their late 40s coming to me saying, you know, I wanted to play drums when I was a kid, never could. I've only been playing drums for 2 years, and I said, well, what's your goal? Well, I just want to get together with the guys down at the local watering hole and just play. Okay, what kind of stuff are you guys playing? Oh, we're playing, you know, top 40 stuff. We're doing Kansas, and we're doing AC/DC and all that. Okay, well, let's learn some basic 8th note and 16th note rock beat, and let's learn the tunes, okay? Maybe learn how to count a song off. That's huge, because a lot of times other musicians rely on the drummer to count the song. You know the tempo. And for some guys, when they say, well, what does that mean? Do I have to know if it's 117 beats per minute? No, what I do is I just try to get the song in my head. You know, I get the song in my head, and I start tapping my foot, okay? Dun, 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 dun. Okay, so there's Back in Black. Here's my tempo. You guys ready? 1, 2, 3, 4, dun, 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 dun. See what I'm saying? Something as simple as that. Never overanalyze. Don't take stuff way too seriously, because it's music. Meant to be fun. The serious stuff is things like being on time and being ready, being prepared. And the thing is, you always got to have fun with this stuff. I've mentioned that in all my videos. Always have fun. It's got to be a good time. You got to have a good time. But is that what you mean by that question? Is like what they should do, or how do they go about landing gigs? But you know,
no. That's very good to know. Those things, because those are the abstract things that drummers need to know, because they think they know the songs, but you know, what else is involved with that? Well, okay, reliable and on time. Well, if you're not those other two things, you can forget about it.
Well,
you're not gonna get the gig. Yeah.
Yeah, because I know some of the best bass players in Vancouver with chops. But would I hire them to do sessions at my studio or hire them to do gigs that I get called for? Absolutely not. Because they've either been late, or I've had I don't mean to be picking on bass players. There was a bass player that I worked with. He forgot his bass. it's funny. I used to laugh about it. Now I just shake my head. How do you do that? You know, and it's like, and then they're like, hey, man, you never call me. Well, yeah, dude, you can play like Jocko, and you can play all these great licks, and you got all this stuff, but I can't rely on you, man. I'm afraid you're not going to show up. And it's hard to drop somebody's name if, you know, you can't rely on these guys. You know what I mean? I'd rather take the guy that's got half the chops and put more time into learning how to play groove and play time and just be a good hang. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's such a big part of it, is when you're working with other musicians, you all got to get along. And I'm sure that, Omar, you've played in several bands where the music was great, everything was awesome, but maybe there was just something not gelling with the band.
Yeah.
And
I've been through that
a lot. And, you know, people say, hey, are you still playing with so-and-so? It's like, no, man. Oh, what happened? You guys were awesome. You know, and it's just like the Police. You know, you think about the stories of the Police. Everybody loves the Police, my favorite band. And those guys can't stand each other. You know,
right.
Because
it's kind of funny reading about that. So they played so well together, but they couldn't stand each other at the same time.
You know, and that causes all kinds of weird animosity and weird vibes on stage. And I'm not about that. That to me, I'm past that. I dealt with that when I was 19 and 20. But even when I was 19 and 20, like I said, I was subbing for one of my teacher's bands, and all these guys were in their 30s, and they treated me like one of the boys. You know, because they were cool guys. I mean, I really wish I was still in touch with some of these guys. They're probably still in Winnipeg, probably still doing their thing. And I miss that kind of connection with people. So make sure you're a good hang. You know, it's like I always say, I don't care how good you are. How good is the hang? You know, if you're
right.
Hang or if you're going to be late all the time. It's like,
then you're not a pro.
Exactly. You know, prepared, reliable, on time. It's three simple things. And that'll get you the gig. You know, and just enjoy yourself, you know.
Great.
Really how I would simplify that answer.
Sounds great. No, that's excellent. This ends part one of the Paradiddler.com's interview with drum educator Mike McAlko. Please listen to part two of this interview for its conclusion.